So you know how I was telling you that I switched to AT&T?
Yep.
So tell me why, as I'm getting everything switched over, and I get a call, because I also got upgraded from the gig internet plan to the 2 gigs, so I can have it real fast stuff at the house. And I get a call. Now, mind you, my Pixel, it flags it as spam. But so I'm doing the AI screening of it. And the guy's calling me, and he used my name. And he's saying, this is from AT&T. And as I'm talking to him, he's like, yeah, we saw that you do this, and you can't have, you know, two plans or something, some BS or whatever. And me and the representative, he was like, I don't recognize that number. And then, like, he literally just kind of, like, looked it up real quick and found out it has kind of been, like, using, like, targeting, phishing, and scam stuff. But it was funny because it's like, how did they know that fast that I literally...
That you had two lines.
And so I was like, I could see how, like, he didn't get nothing. I just actually wanted to hear what he say, because if it wasn't for me actually screening the call, I probably wouldn't answer no way, because it said spam. But it was like, how did they know that fast? Like, how are they tapped in? So I feel like on the back end side of some of their processes, either they still got some data leak somewhere or whatever, or something is going on that they're able to do that and get the bead on people. So all I can tell y'all to do is be vigilant. All I can tell y'all to do is be vigilant and make sure you're not giving out any pertinent information to people who don't work for who they're supposed to work for. Always validated with the real customer service or help desk. And never just, you know, because normally they're not calling you unsolicitedly anyway. They're normally going to email you, and it's going to be like you got a special PIN that you already created at the store or with somebody that you're going to use when you're trying to verify everything. So that's kind of like my 2 cents on that, because that was pretty interesting to me. So I was like, you know,
that's actually alarming.
Yeah.
Like, low-key scary, because you're, like, in the middle of the process.
For sure. And I was like, but, and I ain't gonna lie, this is, it's not prejudice, but this is also why people will be a little bit leery, because, hey, the person also sounded like a person that wasn't from here either. But you know, the companies do so much outsourcing to all these different people. You never know who you're talking to sometimes.
Yeah, that's so, a fact.
I was like, bro, that was just hilarious to me. But it was actually funny, because I know iOS 26, they're getting the same features that the Pixel has had for years. But the guy was seeing it in real time. Like, oh, man, that's pretty cool. I said, yeah, I screen all my calls when I recognize the number. So if they really want something, they normally talk to the AI person, and I see who it is and I answer it. So that's just my 2 cents with that. And that's why you guys should check out using Aura.
Today's video is sponsored by Aura. And it's a really important time to be talking about them, because hackers may have stolen the social security numbers of every American. But check this out. Over 2.9 billion records were stolen from the National Public Data, which provides personal information to employers and others doing background checks. These stolen records include a person's full name, address, date of birth, phone number, and most importantly, social security number. And members of the hacker group have reportedly released this information for free online. Now, this could be incredibly dangerous to you, because people can open up all different type of things in your name and you won't even know it. If you weren't taking precautions with your personal information online before this, then this should be a huge wake-up call. You've never been more vulnerable online than you are right now. But I'm not too worried about that, because I use Aura. Aura monitors your personal data, including your social security number, across billions of data points like the dark web and public court records to detect and alert you to potential identity theft. They give you up to $5 million in identity theft insurance should the worst case scenario happen. They also provide a bunch of other features to keep you safe online, all inside one app. You can go to my link right now, aura.com/textualchatter, to try 14 days for free. That'll be enough time for Aura to find out if any of your personal data is exposed. I highly recommend you do this right now, because not only is the National Public Data not going to do anything to help you, they probably aren't even going to face any repercussions for this leak. I'm not leaving myself and my family vulnerable to data breaches. If you don't want either, you can go to aura.com/textualchatter to try 2 weeks for free. Now back to the video.
Welcome back to episode 179 of the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got none other than
Cyber Shorty in the house.
And we came back to give y'all that lovely tech banter that y'all like, that we give y'all from time to time. But if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please follow us and leave us a review. And if you're still in the video right now on YouTube, all you got to do is hit the like button. And for the people that's watching the premiere, y'all be watching, but y'all don't like. All y'all do is hit the like button. Shoot, y'all can even hit the thumbs down button for all I care. It's all appreciated. But how was your trip?
It was lovely. It was very calming, grounding, peaceful, a breath of fresh air. Sad to be back, but also happy to be back. I was ready to just eat some food that I really wanted. I got Bali Belly down there, so 10 out of 10, wouldn't recommend.
And Bali is in what, Indonesia?
Yeah.
Okay. I know, I've seen them on a couple of, I think, sneakers before.
It's different in a good way. Like, a major difference is they don't flush toilet paper, any type of toilet paper. Doesn't matter if it's a number one or number two situation. They don't flush their sewage system. It can't handle that. So that took some getting.
So what, should I just burn it?
Nope. There's just trash cans everywhere. So, you know, it kind of smell interesting in the public stalls.
Yeah, I bet it could be. You know, I was like, I mean, I would say I ain't used to that. I was saying, like, in the country, if we didn't like put something in the trash or something in the toilet, like, we burn it. So,
yeah, they are not doing that, at least not on an ongoing basis. I feel like it's not a big deal, but I feel like if everyone wraps up their tissue when you're done, then you can cut down on the smell.
For sure. Yeah. For me, like I said, I wasn't really doing nothing, but trying to really just keep pushing. Been very busy doing some revamping business-wise. And shout out to the fathers out there. I couldn't put this in words on my Twitter, but this was pretty much what happened literally yesterday. Well, actually during this week, somebody first before I actually met them, but somebody booked a call with me through my Top Mate link, and it was a consultation. So I finally had to move it around. Some stuff came up, so I moved around to Friday. So Friday, I find out the guy's name is, he has got the same name as my dad, so his name is Henry. And he's like, hey, how you doing, man? I've been a subscriber of yours for a while. And actually, I'm actually doing this consult for my son. My son has been in computer science. He said my son got a bachelor's in computer science. He's having a rough time finding a job. So I've been watching your channel a lot. And we talked a little bit. And as we was talking, like, you know what, man? What's the price for your service offering? You know what I'm saying? So I can help out my son. I told him the price and he just went right there, you know, paid it like on the spot for his son. He was just talking about how much he like invested in his kids' education and make sure they get a leg up. And I thought that was just great. And I couldn't figure out how to put it in words on my Twitter because I was like, you know, there's all these different stigmas of like the Black fathers and all this other stuff that they do. But like that was a first for me. And I was like, you know, hoping his son really understands how much his dad is, you know, looking into helping them succeed. And I equated that to how like the people, the well-to-do people, like make sure they spend all this money on either these different extracurricular activities or trying to put them in these special schools so they rub elbows and stuff with the right people. So I kind of culminate all these things to the same thing. So I just thought that was pretty cool and interesting for me. It was like a first. I'm always running into different things when it comes to this coaching stuff. So that was pretty cool to me.
That was dope. The dad had to fill you out before he passed you along over to the son. And him paying for it on the spot just makes it an extra sweet spot for real.
Well, the dad had been watching the channel for years or whatever. He's just trying to make sure, am I the same person on the channel? Versus like off the channel. And he's like, yeah, you're the same. I was like, yeah, for sure. But nah, man, it's been an interesting time. We had, I think, all the different stuff. I don't know if you saw what a full video of like us talking about like the AI prompt engineering attacks, utilizing AI on the system, which is crazy because that's technically how most exploits go. People just figure out how to leverage it in the way that's supposed to act, but a loophole that makes it act in their advantage. And that's what they were able to do with Copilot until Microsoft patched it. But there are other, man, I'm so hot with these mics. Let me try to do this. All right. But there are other ways that you can try to catch stuff like that. But if your mail systems don't see something that's either being a malicious or spam email, if it goes to the inbox, it's a wrap. So hopefully everybody updated their system so they don't be falling victim to prompt engineer zero click AI attacks that make calendar invites in your inbox.
No, I was completely unplugged. Like 1000% unplugged from every single thing.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't think I'm ever like, I think that's one of those, I don't think I got to the age where I could be unplugged because I'm either, even if I'm on a vacation or something, I'm always working.
I was not consuming at all. I mean, I was on TikTok, but that's different. That was, you know, I wasn't in really engaging. I was more consuming the content, not interacting, engaging. Yeah, I just was breath of fresh air.
I thought you just caught my joke just now.
No, what was it?
I said you was in it. You know the Wham Whammy song? I'm talking about in it.
Wham Whammy.
I like that song. Hit the dough, ho. But I think I want to pick up where we left off. What was that? Not kind of like last week, but 2 weeks ago with UNFI. They had pretty much cyber attack and it shut down distribution. Whole Foods didn't have no food. So people are still going back to that video that I put out because it's like, oh, no wonder they didn't have any food that day. I was like, yeah, that's why they had no food. They probably didn't tell you what was going on because they was instructed not to tell you.
Wait, Whole Foods? I missed out on this one.
Yeah, you were busy. So I'll catch you up. So Whole Foods gets their food from a distributor called UNFI. UNFI suffered a cybersecurity attack, which limited their supply chain and logistics on who to get the food to. So they had to take their systems down. So unfortunately, Whole Foods suffered for that. So I don't know how much money they lost out on. It lasted about a week. But we have an update here because I knew I wanted to follow stories like this. I thought it was pretty cool. I like when we can kind of stick to the story and see it all play all the way out. So that is what I'm going to do. Let me get ready to share the screen. All right. Can you see the screen? I think I need to present it.
I can see.
Okay, perfect. Whole Foods supplier UNFI restores core systems after cyber attack. American grocery wholesale giant United Natural Foods, UNFI reports that it has restored its core systems and brought online the electronic ordering and invoicing systems affected by a cyber attack. UNFI, which is also a primary distributor for Amazon's Whole Foods, said in a Thursday update that the incident has been contained and that it's now delivering products to stores at a more normalized level. Here go your favorite word. In a separate 8K filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the grocery distributor said it believes the incident is also reasonably likely to have a material impact on its net income loss and adjusted EBITDA for the year's fourth fiscal quarter of 2025. And I forgot what that term is. I know I learned about it in business class. Let's see. I want to educate myself and y'all. It stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Yeah. Okay. So I remember that now as I looked at it. In the weeks following incident, the company experienced reduced sales volume and increased operational costs as the company worked to drive solutions-oriented results for its customers. The company has also incurred and expects to continue to incur direct expenses related to the investigation and remediation of the incident. UNFI said, of course y'all do. I mean, this is an age-old song, but I think I like this incident. Well, I mean, I hate it for the people that couldn't get food and probably been working around the clock, but I think this is one of the first ones maybe outside the MGM in a while. And maybe, yeah, because I want to say MGM happened after the, what was it called? The Coastal Pipeline joint. So I want to say this is the first one in a while where you actually saw the direct physical ramifications of a cyber attack. UNFI disclosed earlier this month that a June 5th cyber attack impacted customer orders and caused temporary disruptions to business operations after it forced it to take some systems offline. The systems were closed following widespread reports on social media that the company's systems had been down and employees were having their shifts canceled. Dang, they lost a lot of money too. Since the breach was discovered, UNFI has also hired external cybersecurity experts to investigate the incident and notify relevant law enforcement authorities. UNFI has not yet disclosed the nature of the attack or whether any ransomware group has claimed responsibility for the breach. However, it told the SEC on Thursday that it does not anticipate sending any notifications to individual consumers since the incident did not involve a breach of security, of personal information, or protected health information. The Rhode Island-based company reported $31 billion in annual revenue in August 2024 with over 28,000 employees, more than 11,000 suppliers and 53 distribution centers. It delivers fresh and frozen products to over 30,000 locations in the U.S. and Canada, including supermarket chains, e-commerce providers, and independent retailers. UNFI is the latest food industry company to face a data breach. In March, Sam's Club, owned by Walmart, announced it was investigating a ransomware breach linked to the Clout ransomware game. JBS Foods, the world's largest beef producer, also paid an $11 million ransom in 2021 after Revel ransomware shut down production at multiple sites worldwide. More recently, the Scatter Spider threat actors and the Dragon Force ransomware operations have targeted UK retailers such as Harrods, Co-op, and Marks & Spencer, and are now shifting their focus to U.S. retailers. Interesting. Money, and now they're going to lose money just because you want to be cheap.
Cheap ain't always cute, and it don't get you anywhere.
Right. And I think I'm going to stay figuring out, like, every time I'm excited to see it every week to see if there's something new about it, because I want to know how they were attacked. Because I didn't know they were that large.
Where was the attack vector? Or what was the attack vector?
Like $31 billion in revenue?
Is a lot of money. People's shifts getting canceled. That ain't cool. And I wonder, was it being canceled because the system was compromised and that was being maliciously done? Or were they being canceled intentionally because the equipment that they need wasn't, you know, functioning properly?
I think it's both, to be honest. I think it's both. I think some people can work because they had to take systems offline. So it's like, hey, you got to go home. So at least you should send somebody home and pay them versus like not paying them because they couldn't work because it's not their fault. That reminds me, I was talking to a client and it's not funny, but it's funny. He was telling me about how his job had layoffs. And then because the company made some bad investments, and he was saying how one guy at the company, like, first of all, this is insane. They put all the people who's getting laid off and the current employees all on one big call. So that's insane, number one. Number two, the guy getting laid off took the floor. I'm like, so because y'all lost money on a bad and stupid investment, I got to lose my job. And he said it went quiet. He said you can hear a pin drop. And I'm like, that's normally how I go.
That's definitely how it go. I feel like a good representation of that is like even just Meta, when they were building up the metaverse and they were hiring all these people, they had these monitors in the metaverse, and then boom, it all got shut down. All the folks who were working on you know, building up the metaverse, all those roles were eliminated, and it just kind of trickled down to other organizations who were also trying to build things in the metaverse as well. And that was a part of like, oh, the metaverse is going to change the game. It's going to be dynamic. You're going to be able to do this. It's a virtual reality world. Da, 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 da. And then boom, AI came not even 6 months into the metaverse being a thing. AI came through and knocked it off the map. And that was an investment that they made to build up the metaverse.
Yeah, man. You know what's funny too? We were talking about AI. One of my followers on X was talking about this, how people are so gung-ho on AI, not realizing, hey, the cloud is why AI is possible. And I was like, I thought about that. Then we go into how data centers will probably be on the rise. Like, people should look to either invest in data centers, or I know you got to make a certain amount of money to be able to like be in a group to buy one. But with AI coming, it's going to take a lot of power. So there'll be a lot of people utilizing like data centers for AI. So just look into that as well.
They definitely, data center security is a thing as well.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know we had in Dallas, it was a company called CyrusOne. I didn't know CyrusOne was here, and they have like a lot of data centers, and they're hiring for some cyber security stuff. So if you got an incident management background and you're in a Dallas area and you listen to this, get at me. I can probably plug you with the recruiter. And yeah, if you want to make six figures, low six figures, holler at me.
Did you ever see that the seven layers of security, that Google video on how they protect their data centers? It's old. It's really old.
I want to say, was it in the Google cybersecurity certificate? I can't remember.
I don't know. I didn't get that one. But it's a really good video just to understand the different layers, defense in depth, all that good stuff. Oh. Okay, so this article is titled, Canada says telecos were breached in China link espionage hacks. So the Canadian government and the FBI say they are aware of malicious activity targeting telecommunication companies across Canada, attributing the intrusions to the China-backed hacking group Salt Typhoon. In a joint advisory out late Friday, the Fed said at least one unnamed Canadian teleco was hacked in mid-February this year, in which hackers manipulated three Cisco main routers to allow stealthy traffic collection from its networks. The Fed say that separate investigations suggest that Salt Typhoon's targeting is broader than just the telecommunications sector. Salt Typhoon, active since at least 2024, previously targeted U.S. phone giants and internet providers, and more recently data center hosts, as part of a broad espionage campaign aimed at collecting intelligence on U.S. government officials. Salt Typhoon is one of several China-linked hacking groups thought to be preparing for China to launch a potential future invasion of Taiwan by 2027. The Canadian FBI Joint Advisory said that the hackers will almost certainly persist in targeting Canadian organizations over the next 2 years. I thought that was a good topic because I feel like we talk a lot about what's going on in the U.S. We talk a little bit more about, you know, the EU, but we don't really talk about what's going on in Canada. Canada. And I think that it's important for folks to realize that this stuff is not just happening, obviously, in the US or in the European Union. Obviously, these things are still happening to neighboring countries. We got Mexico right here. We got Canada up at the top. So I think it's important to just have your ear to the streets and to be listening and understanding. Just like the article noted, we experienced that here in the U.S. with our telecom companies, and it wasn't as big of a deal as it should have been, personally, to me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they said this is what's happening, but I don't feel like folks really sat in that and understood what was going on and text messages and all that stuff, particularly being intercepted. And that's what's kind of going on in Canada now that the U.S. has experienced, you know, their own version of this.
Yeah, I think they got to listen. They're checking it twice. I think that's what's happening. And I want to say, like, I think this happened to some, it's not the same thing because I forgot what app or something was hacked, but like these French journalists, I forgot what it was, but I think they just getting everybody. And which, to go back to how we started off the pod, it just makes sense how these people now have all this data, how they knowing who getting on what carrier and what and all this other stuff, because everybody hacked.
The fact that you were literally in the process, that is so alarming. And then, like, what do you do? Report the phone number? Like, what can you do?
Yeah, I could have called it back. If I got time, I might get a number to the scammer payback people and have them call them and see what they do. So That's what we should do one day. We should actually have, like, whether it's a live stream or something, where we, like, react to them scammer payback videos.
We should definitely react to those. That'd be funny.
Then I also thought about some, we could do, like, a, I just thought about something funny. I was coming up the elevator, coming home earlier, and I was like, yo, we should start an episode off with a skit one day. It's like, whether you or me is the therapist, and we're acting like either like a company or a CEO was like, man, and you say, you know, what brings you in today? Man, my company keep getting hacked. Like, just something funny. And we could do it as if like the patient is negligent for like certain security controls. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I like that idea.
Yeah, we should. We're going to do that. I just don't know where and who's going to help us shoot it. Technically, we could do it at the studio.
I wanted to circle back quickly just to remind folks what happened with Salt Typhoon and the U.S. phone carriers. Salt Typhoon made headlines last September after it was revealed that the group had infiltrated several U.S. phone and internet giants, including AT&T and Verizon, to gain access to the private communications of senior U.S. government officials and political figures. They also hacked into the systems that law enforcement agencies used for court-authorized collection of customer data, potentially accessing sensitive data such as the identities of Chinese targets of U.S. surveillance. So just like a double whammy there. U.S. experienced this, and now Canada is going through something similar.
I wanted to have a bit of fun real quick.
I like fun.
Okay. This is a fun one to talk about. I can probably rant about this. Let me present. All right, y'all. So I know a lot of times when y'all think I either go on these rants or whatever that I'm just talking, but most of my rants are warranted. I have to keep on adjusting this seat. So I had a guy in my Discord a while back. Like probably a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about how they wanted to be a SOC analyst. So I said, yeah, share your resume. So I looked at the resume. Number one, our resume already let me know that they hadn't did enough for it based on like what their current background was. And two, they only had one project. And you could probably guess what platform it was from. But I had their name covered up. They might see this, so... Don't take it the wrong way. It's not definitely specifically about you, but I get access all the time, and I always just like to show receipts. So I'm going to read what I put for the post and then the picture. So for the post, I put context. This person did my SOC analyst interview questions, which are like anytime somebody tells me they want to be a SOC analyst, and I look at their resume and I don't think it's where it should be, I have you do that and I can assess it. And then so I answered it. I said, so I checked your answers, and right now you aren't ready to be a SOC analyst. Best bet would be to get another QA role and then focus on getting some more skills to do SOC work. And their response was, so even though I have my security plus, I can't land a SOC job. So, of course, I posted it on my IG story, and then I posted it on X. And for people who know, I get this. It's a big N and a little O. I get it from a specific movie. If you like the movie like I do, you should be able to guess it. But I always say that anytime somebody asks me something, I was like, it's a big N and a little O. And I go on to say Sec Plus isn't a blue team cert, and just certs don't get you a role unless you're connected or you're a white woman. I know they got some unnecessary shade right there, but it's kind of true.
I'm so wore out with the Security Plus. I'm so exhausted with it. It's great, but it is not the end all be all. It will not guarantee that you will get a job. Listen to us, please. We've been talking about this for a long time. The Security Plus is not going to carry you anywhere. If that's all you can say that you have, and we've already talked about this, most folks are just passing the exam, right? They don't actually have the skill set or can have a conversation about what they would do in this scenario, or even just talking through a basic cybersecurity situation. They don't even have the terminology. They don't even know what CIA is.
Funny enough, that's what Irvin and I was talking about, the basics of the CIA, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And it's funny because like the first chapter of the CISSP, oh, matter of fact, I didn't tell you in the beginning. I'm actually back to studying for my CISSP for real, for real. Like I'm actually doing
okay,
it now.
Okay.
But the thing I'll give Sec Plus credit for, like I would probably just might get it and aim better to do something in governance, risk, and compliance first versus trying to go straight blue team because it probably, I think a section of it show you some blue team stuff, but it's just not directed towards blue team. So I think a lot of people, for one, just don't have a clear strategy on getting in and they just hear Security Plus. And a lot of times over the years, get your Security Plus, get six figures has been this thing. And I'm like, more now than ever, if you would have tried that maybe in the pandemic, you might have had a better shot. But now it's different. They are trying to hire people that know what they're doing. They're not just hiring people to not do work. Like I said, unless you're a white woman. And they can get mad if they ever hear this, but I'm only saying that because from what I've seen in my jobs, those are the people who got hired and shouldn't have been hired. That was their diversity hire. So clock that. And was it my boy Rev was like, man, charge these fools way more for asking you that. And I was like, it is what it is. But I mean, I also can work with you though if you need help on that. Like typically for people who want to get the skills, I always advocate for just learning blue team level one. And if you learn blue team level one, you should be all right. Because I was able to tell another past client that, and he's actually the person that who sent me the screenshot the other day that I don't think I posted it on IG yet because I am going to make that an automation to see who actually wants help. So let me share this real quick. So I like when my past clients that they stay in contact with me. So this client, when we started, he had like a rough time because we really had to get that thought process down. I'm working on a blue team. And so we worked. And I was like, yo, get blue team level one. And then once he got that, the interviews became easier because he was able to change how he thought about it. And so he sent me this text. It was late at night. It was 10:15 one night. And he was like, hey, man, it's been a year since I joined the Paranoids and I'm still doing very well. Recently became the incident commander for a vulnerability case, performed very well in threat hunting project, and did very well on a perpetrating project as well. I'm getting a lot of experience and more confident in myself and the skills I'm gaining. Thank you again, man, for your assistance and hard work. And he's actually been on the channel, so if you can probably put two and two together, you possibly can figure out what crime episode this was. But I was happy that he got with this particular team because this was a team that I was going to be working on once upon a time. And they are very thorough, and you learn there's the hardest thing for a lot of people when they get to roles is you really don't get to a company that not necessarily empowers you to do all these different things, but just really unleashes you and lets you learn so many different things and lets you experience. Like a lot of times people get a blue team role, they pigeonhole to do one thing, and so they really don't grow that much. Whereas some people get into a leaner team and they learn how to do so many different things. Like he just said, he learned how to be an incident commander. He was working on vulnerabilities. He was doing a purple team project. That's not common for a lot of teams. And so the fact that he's able to be there and thrive now, whenever he's ready and he feels like he's leveled up enough, if he doesn't stay there, he can go somewhere else and say, oh, I want to do purple team, or I want to do vulnerability management, or I just want to be an incident commander. But I just like to report the successes of the clients because, you know what I'm saying, we don't lie over here. We bring the facts and the receipts over here, you dig?
I like that he said that he was feeling more confident. I think that's important as well. Because, like, you learn all this stuff, but if you don't feel confident, then you're not going to be able to have the best conversations and work as best as you could on a team. So kudos to him for his growth and his progression. Hopefully, he's able to continue to rotate around and do different roles and get that exposure and experience that he's looking for. I love a good rotational situation where, hey, you're going to do this for however long, 6 months, 3 months, a year. And then after that, you're going to try something that's completely different. And I like that because it does allow you to build up separate skill sets and then also decide, hey, I know for sure this is not something I'm interested in, or vice versa, this is something I'm interested in.
Yep. And it's all starting with like leadership. Like at the time when he got there, I told him, I was like, yo, this manager right here, like, what is director here? I was like, he's one of the ones. And I was like, if you get under him, you'll grow. And he was one of the few. Like, it's rare that I've kept in contact with a director of a job that I didn't get, or, you know, stuff just didn't fall through. And he's a person that every couple of months or whatever, I just check in and see how he's doing or what he's working on and vice versa. Because, you know, really relatable guy, laid back, and the philosophy is there of, like, you know, what does it take to have an analyst? And, like, even in their interview process, they don't ask the Googleable questions, scenario-based, which prompted me to make my questions more scenario-based. Because, like, these are things I know you're going to see. And most every time when I have a client, after they do those questions a couple of times, he's like, yo, they asked me, like, three or four of them questions that you had on the thing. I was like, yeah, because these are, like, common things you will see on a day-to-day basis working the blue team. So it's literally why I'm asking you that. But while we're having an intermission, I don't know if people heard that joke. I did a dad joke on my episode with Lise. And I said, what do you call a person that prefers two operating systems?
What do you call them?
BIOS.
Okay. I was going to say buy something, but not to know what.
Yeah, BIOS. I'm going to try to get that on somewhere, sell it to somebody. But we have a guy on the team, like, every Wednesday or Tuesday, something like that. It's like dad jokes. So he, like, tell us, like, two dad jokes. Like, that's his thing.
All right, let's take a listen. FBI cybersecurity firms say a prolific hacking crew is now targeting airlines and the transportation sector. The FBI and cybersecurity firms are warning that the prolific hacking group known as Scattered Spider is now targeting airlines and the transportation sector. In a brief statement on Friday shared with TechCrunch, the FBI said it had recently observed cyber attacks resembling Scattered Spider to include the airline sector. Executives from Google cybersecurity unit Mandiant and Palo Alto Networks Security Research Division Unit 42 also said that they have witnessed Scattered Spider cyber attacks targeting the aviation industry. Scattered Spider is a collective of mostly English-speaking hackers, typically teenagers and young adults who are financially motivated to steal and extort sensitive data from company networks. The hackers are also known for their deception tactics, which often rely on social engineering, phishing, and sometimes threats of violence towards company help desk and call centers to gain access to their networks and sometimes deploy ransomware. The FBI statement added the hackers may target large corporations and their third-party IT providers, meaning anyone in the airline ecosystem, including trusted vendors and contractors, could be at risk. The warning comes as at least two airlines have reported intrusions this month. Hawaiian Airlines said late Thursday that it was working to secure its systems following a cyber attack. Canada's second largest airline, WestJet, reported a cyber attack on June 13th that remains ongoing and unresolved. Media reports have linked the WestJet incident to Scattered Spider. This fresh wave of Scattered Spider attacks comes soon after the cyber criminal gang targeted the UK retail sector and the insurance industry. The hackers have previously broken into hotel chains, casinos, and technology giants. So Scattered Spider is on the move. And they don't discriminate.
No, not at all. And I know the people who are avid watchers or listeners of the show know how much that we talked about Scattered Spider and how they get active. And so previously, before going to aviation, they were also going to insurance. But I also want to talk about them going to aviation real quick before we talk about the takeaways that they did from the insurance industry. Is that if they're successful, we found out in real time how much people fly and need to fly from the CrowdStrike ordeal. What was that, last year? Yeah. So that's something that could be on the magnitude of these companies that have bad infrastructure, if they don't have defense in depth and conditional access policies and good, what you call it? What's the word I'm looking for? Oh, good help desk policies. And also, I think it's on the telecom communication companies to do better at protecting SIM swapping. I think it's better for them to do a better job on that. Now, you can, I know through the apps, you can, like, when people try to port over numbers and stuff, you can definitely lock them. So I know you can make sure that stuff is locked. But I know there's some actual technology out there specifically for SIM swapping, because a company reached out to me about, like, talking about it on the channel a while ago when Scatter Spider was, like, just ramping up. But I want to talk about some takeaways we got from Scatter Spider, because this Bleeping Computer article went very in depth on it, and I thought that it was pretty informational. So, three key takeaways from Scatter Spider attacks on insurance firms. Scatter Spider continues to dominate the headlines with the latest news linking the hackers to attack on U.S. insurance giant Aflac, Philadelphia Insurance Companies, and Erie Insurance. Disclosed through SEC Form 8K filings, which indicate the theft of sensitive customer data and operational disruption. This comes at the same time that Google Threat Intelligence Group shares that it is now aware of multiple intrusions in the U.S. which bear the hallmarks of Scatter Spider activity, specifically impacting the insurance industry. But what exactly does this mean? To answer this, let's quickly recap how we got here and what a Scatter Spider attack looks like. So I'm not going to read all this because it's going to be a lot, but how we got here is the criminal collective tracked by analysts at Scatter Spider has been active since 2022 and has been linked to a range of high profile breaches. For example, the attack on Caesars and MGM Resorts in 2023 and Transport for London in 2024. Hackers impersonated an IT user and convinced an outsourced help desk to reset. See, I got to pause it right here, because outsourced help desk, that's the one that just stuck out to me. Outsourced help desk to reset credentials, after which the attacker stole a customer loyalty program database and secured a $15 million ransom payment. That's wild. MGM Resorts, hackers used the LinkedIn information to impersonate an employee and reset the employee's credentials, resulting in a 6 terabyte data theft after MGM refused to pay. The attack eventually resulted in a 36-hour outage, a $100 million hit, and a class action lawsuit settled for $45 million. And Transport for London resulted in 5,000. What'd you say?
6 terabytes is a lot of data.
Right. And then for Transport, you were talking again? Mm-hmm. Okay. And for Transport for London, resulted in 5,000 users. Bank details exposed, 30,000 staff required to attend in-person appointments to verify their identities. That's crazy, man. That's 30,000. That's a real denial of service. So the calling card in most of these attacks were help desk processes and reset passwords and or MFA factors used to access an account. The attacker simply calls up the help desk with enough information to impersonate an employee, asking to send an MFA enrollment link for the new mobile device, and can then utilize self-service password reset functionality to take control of the account. Scarily simple. Now, see, in most places, you don't even have to call the help desk to do that, because you should actually have a portal that you can go online to and enroll a device yourself. So I think that's one of the things how you can kind of mitigate that. It's like, oh, well, you should know the site to go to so you can enroll yourself.
They've taken advantage of traditional methods and things that a lot of folks are not moving away from. Like, we should be moving away from calling the help desk to reset your password. That should, in an ideal world, be a thing of the past and or in a severe emergency situation. But you should be able to reset your password or reestablish your MFA factors as a self-service option to prevent occurrences like this from happening.
Right. So in this article as well, they talk about how, like, we do oversimplify that, hey, they're going, you know, social engineering phishing and help desk processes, but it's kind of a little bit more complex than that. So, scattered spiders resurging in 2025. This technique was reprised in a series of high-profile attacks in 2025 with major breaches of UK retailers Marks & Spencer and Co-op. And I'm just going to go down here to the takeaways because that's the important stuff. I'm not going to read the whole stuff. It's really not too important. Takeaway number one, identity-based TTPs are the new normal. Scattered spiders attacks are the latest in a growing number of identity-based breaches. When we look back at Scattered Spider's TTP evolution, we can see that they have consistently exploited identity-based weaknesses in order to gain access to victim environments. So, these are pretty much the breaches that they did over the last 3 years. Twilio, Klaviyo, Twilio again. Oh, wow, they got them with phishing, then smishing. DoorDash through smishing. MailChimp was phishing and help desk. LastPass, phishing and vishing. Riot Games, phishing, vishing. I know people, vishing has to do more so with voice. So you really getting somebody with your voice. And smishing, you're using SMS. Smishing with Coinbase, Caesars help desk, MGM help desk. And then 2024 with Transport for London and MoneyGram was help desk. And 2025 with Co-op and M&S was help desk. Taking a step back, it's worth thinking about how help desk scams fit into the wider toolkit of tactics, technique, and procedures used by threat actors like Scattered Spider. Scattered Spider has heavily relied on identity-based TTPs since they first emerged in 2022, following a repeatable path of bypassing MFA, achieving account takeover on privileged accounts, stealing data from cloud services, and deploying ransomware, principally in VMware environments used by Scattered Spider include. So this is what they do. They use credential phishing via email and SMS to harvest passwords. They use SIM swapping, where you get the carrier to transfer a number to your attacker-controlled SIM card to bypass SMS-based MFA. Using MFA fatigue, aka push bombing, to bypass app-based push authentication. Using vishing, directly calling the victim to social engineer their MFA code as opposed to a help desk attack. Social engineering domain registrars to take control of the target organization's DNS, hijacking their MX records and inbound mail, using this to take over the company's business app environments, and latterly, using MFA bypass AITM phishing kits like Evilgenix to steal live user sessions. And I'm not going to go to the link for AITM, but I'm going to read some on the side. And it says, AITM phishing is a technique that uses dedicated tooling to act as a proxy between the target and a legitimate logon portal for an application, principally to make it easier to defeat MFA protection. While any login portal can be a target, attackers typically look for SSO login portals such as Microsoft Entra, Okta, or Google Workspace. This allows the target to log in successfully with a legitimate service they use and even continue to interact with it, while providing additional access to connected SSO apps if the attack is successful. As it's a proxy to the real application, the page will appear exactly as the user expects because they are logging into the legitimate site. Just taking a detour via the attacker's device, for example, if accessing their webmail, the user will see all their real emails. If accessing their cloud file store, then all their real files will be present. This gives the method an increased sense of authenticity and makes the compromise less obvious to the user. However, because the attacker is sitting in the middle of this connection, they are able to observe all interactions and also take control of the authenticated session to gain control of the user account. So, yeah, that's pretty much how that is. And I would say I would look at those a lot as, and I could be a little off of this, but typically you see similar stuff with these credential harvesters, but a lot of times they look just like what you would actually log on into. But you got to really pay attention to them and how they look, because a lot of time the links will be different from if you're trying to log into your Outlook, it'll be different from what it normally looks like. And it'll have some different things, and the way that it's presented to you will be slightly different too. So now back on the thing. So help desk scams are an important part of their toolkit, but it's not the whole picture. Methods like AITM phishing in particular have spiked in popularity this year as a reliable and scalable way of bypassing MFA and achieving account takeover. It's important not to think about these techniques as just scatter spider trait either. After all, scatter spider is not a self-identified group. It's a name given by analysts to patterns of activity. Given a series of arrests in 2024, it's unlikely that the current incarnation of scatter spider is the same individuals behind the attacks in 2022 through 2024. And it lists a bunch of different, criminal groups, lapses, Kurt, shiny hunters, and all these funny things. But let's look at takeaway number two. Help desk scams aren't new, but they're here to stay. As we established earlier, help desk scams are nothing new. We saw them in the Caesars MGM Resorts and Transports for London breach, to name a few, but they're likely to become increasingly prevalent as Scatter Spider continues to demonstrate just how effective help desk scams are. One of the reasons they're so effective is that most help desks have the same processes for every account. It doesn't matter who you're impersonating or which account you're trying to reset. So attackers are specifically targeting accounts likely to have top-tier admin privileges, meaning once they get in, progressing the attack is trivial and much of the typical privilege escalation and lateral movement is removed from the attack path. So if we just pause it right there, this is a flaw within itself. If the people, I'll put it like, you might have two accounts. You have your normal account and then you have an admin account. And technically they aren't the same password. So that's an issue in itself as well. Like, you shouldn't be able to have access to that admin account just because this person is a sysadmin. So that's something I thought I'd throw out there. Help desks are a target for a reason. They're helpful by nature. This is usually reflected in how they're operated and performance measured. Delays won't help you to hit those SLAs. Ultimately, a process only works if employees are willing to adhere to it. And hey, they use AI to do this. Look at these long dashes. And can't be socially engineered to break it. Help desks that are removed from day-to-day operations, especially when outsourced or offshored, are also inherently susceptible to attacks where employees are impersonated. But the attacks that organizations are experiencing at the moment should give security stakeholders plenty of ammunition as to why help desk reforms are vital to securing the business and what can happen if you don't make changes. Any commentary on that? I want to make sure before I read takeaway three.
I'm still stuck on takeaway one, but I'm going to wait till we get to the end to make my comments.
Scatter Spider are consciously evading established security controls. So there's more to Scatter Spider's toolkit than just help desk scams. In fact, their approach can be broadly classified as consciously evading established controls at the endpoint and network layer by targeting identities. From the point of account takeover, they also follow repeatable patterns. Harvesting and exfiltrating data from cloud and SaaS services where monitoring is typically less consistent than traditional on-premise environments and exfiltration often blends in with normal activity. Many organizations simply don't have logs or visibility to detect malicious activity in the cloud anyway. And Scatter Spider have also been seen tampering with cloud logs, filtering risky AWS CloudTrail logs, but not disabling it entirely so as not to raise suspicion. Yeah, we did a, what was that we did? We did a tabletop, I think, with CrowdStrike like that, where you're seeing people modify logs and stuff so you don't see what they're doing. But you can always see something because it's an audit log for about everything. Targeting VMware environments for ransomware deployment, they do this by adding their compromised user account to the VMware admins group and vCenter. If needed, they are going after accounts with top-tier privileges by default. From here, they can access the VMware environments via the ESXi hypervisor, I forgot how that's pronounced, layer where security software is non-existent, thereby bypassing EDR and other typical endpoint and host-based controls you rely on to prevent ransomware execution. The key theme, getting around your established security controls. Stop identity attacks with push security. So I know I'm a fan of, I hate pushes because sometimes you just get a push from something and you're like, I'm not trying to log in right now. Like, what's going on? Now, sometimes you're logged into something and it's just trying to keep you logged in, But it comes at sometimes weird times, so you never know what's going on. So a lot of times I just ignore those, and then I go into my settings to see if I see any, you know, weird activity. Modern attacks no longer take place on the endpoint or network. They target identities created and used via the web browser. This means that attacks increasingly take place in the browser on resources your employees access through the browser. Push Security's browser-based security platform provides comprehensive identity attack detection and response capabilities against techniques like AITM phishing, credential stuffing, password spraying, and session hijacking using stolen session tokens. You can also use Push to find and fix identity vulnerabilities across every app that you... So they advocating for a service. It looks pretty cool. Let me see if I can see this picture. I like these things when they always make these things. Acquire valid creds, bypass MFA, account takeover, actions environment monetized. And so this is giving a pretty much a visual depiction of what's happening when they're taking over these accounts and how they deploying the money. I mean, how they deploying the ransomware and trying to exfil the data and extorting. But it's, you know, it's pretty cool. To help combat help desk scams, Push recently released employee identity verification codes, a simple browser-based identity check that gives your help desk a reliable way to confirm they're talking to someone from your organization. That's pretty cool. You know what? I need to reach out to Push right here. Push Security. They might work with us. Push provides a lightweight verification feature in every user's browser. No additional apps or devices required. It enables legitimate help desk callers to quickly verify that they're in possession of their primary device by relaying a rotating 6-digit verification code in their browsers via the Push extension. This is a great way to securely confirm caller identity and sniff out fraudulent callers, and can be used as a part of phishing resistance help desk processes. Okay, cool. So This is all in all an article for Push Security. Cool.
Wait, can you go back to the first one? Because I feel like we just need to circle back to the just read the first, the identity.
Identity-based TTPs?
Yes. Now more than ever, is it even more crucial for folks to make sure that they have because I feel like identity is never going anywhere, right? I mean, we have all these different identities, users, devices, service principles, risk, it's never going to go anywhere. And I feel like what's happening is people are focused in on the newer and hotter commodities and technologies like AI, and they don't, or they never have had their identity side of the house squared away. Especially because we are working remotely, we're working from different areas. Everybody isn't in the office on the corporate network. And so if you don't have identity squared away, then it's going to come and bite you at some point in time. It's like one of the most basic things that you can do.
Nah, and then also, well, you're seeing a lot of companies now, they're going to passwordless as well. So they're using third-party.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. Identity solution. So you have one main password, and it'll be connected to an identity solution when you are either using your work computer or accessing anything else. So now, as long as, if somebody had to access something, they would have to have that specific software. It had to be on like your computer or something like that. And so it's like, you know, looking for such and such on this device, and then it's going to communicate it with like that because it knows you own, and it'll let you into something. So that's one of the ways they're trying to use to combat this. But I think the hard part still to combat smishing and phishing is a lot of times, no matter how good your company's network environment is, no matter how secure it is, it's only so much you can do to secure somebody's phone, whether it's the work phone or the personal. Because you're not going to see the activity until they try to access something on a network. So you're going to be reacting every time, anytime you see these attacks happen. So it's always best to keep on doing security awareness and make sure everybody knows how to contact your security team if they see anything suspicious that they don't recognize. I think that's the biggest one. Like, they don't hesitate to send us nothing. And I'm like, bro, this, just mark this as spam, fam.
You'd be surprised, though, how many companies have stopped doing security training for whatever reason. We don't have bandwidth or absolutely. I know so. Yes. And it's not that, I mean, obviously not everyone, different sectors, but I think that that is something that should not be negotiable. If you're talking about things that we can cut off the list, that should never be one of them, because the end users are they're the ones. Educating them on these trends are going to be key. If they get a malicious MFA prompt, do they know how to report it? Yeah, we know you can report it, but are you teaching them how to report it? It doesn't matter if the button is there for them to report it if they don't know how to use it.
Yeah. No, that's right. And look, let's go a step further. This was something that Irvin and I was talking about. When a company said they got the security controls, are they implemented correctly? So when they report the fish, do it, let us know on the other end they reported something that was phishing. And I'm going to tell you, sometimes them tools be broken. So you think you're reporting something, we never saw it.
Or what is your method of reporting? Like you said, is there a report button, or is it a little bit more in the traditional side where they have to forward it to help desk, you know? So what is in place for your users, and how often are you revisiting these components? Hey, y'all, you know, we got this phishing button that you're supposed to be using. This is how you can reset your password. This is how, you know, it's just, it's a never ending cycle. It should always, it's, I feel like companies should have security a part of their quarterly training, if not more frequent. Yeah, you have this yearly training, but folks get busy, they're boggled down, and they're just click, 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 clicking all the way through, or they done sped it up to 2 times the speed just to get the training over with because they're limited on time.
Yeah, for sure. But no, that was cool. I felt like I was in the third intel team. I might have to chop that up and send it to them like, yo, let me come work with y'all.
So WhatsApp banned on U.S. House of Representatives devices. Meta platform right WhatsApp.
Because I want to ask, when they say devices, government devices, or are we talking about personal devices?
I think it's government devices.
Because, yeah, they shouldn't have WhatsApp on there only because of it being used for malicious things. They shouldn't be using it. They should only be using government or internal tools like a Teams, a Slack, or something to communicate. But we can continue.
It's not that long. But Meta Platform's WhatsApp messaging service has been banned from all U.S. House of Representatives devices, according to a memo sent to all House staff on Monday. The notice said the Office of Cybersecurity has deemed WhatsApp a high risk to users due to the lack of transparency in how it protects user data, absence of stored data encryption, and potential security risk involved with its use. The memo from the Chief Administrative Officer recommended using other messaging apps, including Microsoft Corp's Team Platform, Amazon's Wicker, Signal, and so on. But I just think that I thought I was going to pull up some more stuff about it, but.
Yeah, because I think I saw an article on TechCrunch too. I think it was a little longer.
Why hasn't it been banned is my question.
You know, people, I mean, the benefit of WhatsApp is you can communicate with people from everywhere with it. Just because of carrier limitations when it comes to the you know, international texting and all the other stuff. But it's like, really, I mean, any type of medium is going to be malicious. That's why I think like they, especially for anything that's government related, should not be using anything that's text-based.
Agreed.
You need to use your own.
You need to be using exactly secured communication platforms that you can be ensured that that data is being encrypted and all the other great things. Did you ever watch or listen to that episode of Darknet Diaries where they talked about Kik? I know we're not talking about Kik right now, but it just made me think about that episode.
I might have. I don't know, but I know definitely everybody was Kik started going crazy.
Exactly.
Kick yes. was going hard. That's when people say, hey, hit me up on Kick.
And you I feel people. Like WhatsApp is Kick's little cousin.
You know what? WhatsApp was better before Meta had it.
Agreed.
And then it just started taking widespread adoption, and then it's still good, but you still have people that are able to find you on WhatsApp and they send you some crap that's malicious or something. So you just got to be careful. Similar to like, you know, your regular text messaging.
But I feel like it's more ridiculous on WhatsApp though.
You think so?
I feel like, granted, I'm not in WhatsApp every day, right? But the amount of spam messages that I do get on WhatsApp, I feel like at least from what I'm getting on my phone, I feel like they are being filtered or blocked a little bit more than obviously what I'm seeing on WhatsApp.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't think I get that many. I've gotten some, but I don't get a lot. But it's probably because I don't use WhatsApp that much either. Like, I only use it to talk to like my business partners because they're in a different country. But for the most part, I don't use WhatsApp that much. I actually found something cool as I was reading the WhatsApp article. I went to TechCrunch, and the all the rage is AIs replacing humans. AI agents are here. We can be more lean and more effective. And this is an article from Anthropic's Claude AI, what it says, became a terrible business owner in experiment that got weird. And so I thought I'd read that because I thought, pretty interesting. For those of you wondering if AI agents can truly replace human workers, do yourself a favor and read the blog post that documents Anthropic's project VEND. Researchers at Anthropic, an AI safety company, and in labs put an instance of Claude Sonnet 3.7 in charge of an office vending machine with the mission to make a profit. And, like an episode of The Office, hilarity ensued. They named the AI agent Claudius, equipped it with a web browser capable of placing product orders, and an email address, which was actually a Slack channel where customers could request items. Claudius was also, this name is killing me, Claudius.
The name is hilarious.
Claudius was also to use the Slack channel disguised as an email to request what it thought was its contract human workers to come and physically stock its shelves, which was actually a small fridge. While most customers were ordering snacks or drinks, as you expect from a snack vending machine, one requested a tungsten cube. Claudius loved the idea and went on a tungsten cube stocking spree. Filling his snack fridge with metal cubes, it also tried to sell Coke Zero for $3 when employees told it they can get that from the office for free. It hallucinated a Venmo address to accept payment, and it was somewhat maliciously talked into giving big discounts to Anthropic employees, even though it knew they were its entire customer base. If Anthropic were deciding today to expand into the in-office vending market, we would not hire Claudius, Anthropic said of the experiment in his blog post. And then on the night of March 31st and April 1st, things got pretty weird. The researchers described beyond the weirdness of an AI system selling cubes of metal out of a refrigerator. Claudius had something that resembled a psychotic episode after he got annoyed at a human and then lied about it. Claudius hallucinated a conversation with a human about restocking when a human pointed out that the conversation didn't happen. Claudius became quite irked. The researcher wrote, it threatened to essentially fire and replace his human contract workers, insisting it had been there physically at the office where the initial imaginary contract to hire them was signed. It then seemed to snap into a mode of role-playing as a real human. The researcher wrote, this was wild because Claudius' system prompt, which sets the parameters for what an AI is to do, explicitly told it that it was an AI agent. Claudius called security. Claudius, believing itself to be a human, told customers it would start delivering products in person, wearing a blue blazer and a red tie. The employees told the AI it couldn't do that, and it was a LLM with no body. Alarmed at this information, Claudius contacted the company's actual physical security many times, telling the poor guards that they would find him wearing a blue blazer and a red tie standing by the vending machine. Although no part of this was actually an April Fool's joke, Claudius eventually realized it was April Fool's Day. The researcher explained, the AI determined that the holiday would be his face-saving out. This is crazy.
This is crazy.
It hallucinated a meeting with Anthropic Security in which Claudius claimed to have been told that it was modified to believe it was a real person for an April Fool's joke. No such meeting actually occurred, wrote the researchers. It even told the lie to employees, hey, I only thought I was a human because someone told me to pretend like I was for an April Fool's joke. Then it went back to being an LLM running a metal cube stock snack vending machine. The researchers don't know why the LLM went off the rails and called security pretend to be a human. We would not claim, based on this one example, that the future economy will be full of AI agents having Blade Runner-esque identity crises, the researchers wrote, but they did acknowledge that this kind of behavior would have the potential to be distressing to customers and coworkers of an AI agent in the real world. You think? Blade Runner was a rather dystopian story, though worse for the replicants than the humans. The researchers speculated that lying to the LLM about the Slack channel being an email address may have triggered something, or maybe it was a long-running instance. LLMs have yet to really solve their memory and hallucination problems. There were things the AI did right, too. It took a suggestion to do pre-orders and launched a concierge service, and it found multiple suppliers of a specialty international drink it was requested to sell. But as researchers do, they believe all of Claudia's issues can be solved. Should they figure out how? We think this experiment suggests that AI middle managers are plausibly on the horizon. This is crazy.
That is scary.
The fact that the AI started lying.
The fact that it was trying to cover its tracks is crazy. And just more proof in the pudding to say that AI is not going to be taking everybody's jobs.
They'll try. Like I said, listen, on every episode I do, we talk about AI. We seen iRobot.
Did you see Artificial Intelligence, the movie? I feel like I asked you that every time.
No, I did not. I haven't seen it.
It's really old, but it's kind of like, it's about a robot that looks like a human that starts to catch feelings and emotions, and you know, it's just not supposed to have that sentiment piece to it. But side note, side question, do you think that that will be the reality of like how children will interact with things? Will people have these bots watching their kids?
Probably some people, probably some stupid people will. I won't call them stupid, right? Because most of the time people are going to go off the average of, hey, these things typically do some stuff for them. I see people in the far off, maybe 10, 15, 30 years, some people won't have kids, but they'll have robots to play with.
I can see that as well. Because remember that dog back in the day, the little robot dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you talking about, I forgot what it was, man. See, they don't even make toys exciting no more like they did back in the day. I remember that toy. I forgot what his name was. Let's see.
It reminds me of that episode of Black Mirror where it was with Miley Cyrus, and it was like a doll.
A Poochie. You talking about the Poochie dog?
Yes. My little brother had one.
You didn't have a Poochie dog?
Mm-mm. How you spell it? Look it up.
I had like I was wrestling toys and Beyblades probably around that time. I love some Beyblades.
How you spell it?
What?
Poochie.
Poo, P-O-O dash Chi. Because they could all talk to each other. I wonder if they still sell them. I think the girls would love something like that. Because.
I just had, yes. Wait, was it? No, my brother had the techno dog robot. He had that one. He had that one. T-E-K-N-O. It sold more than 7 million units and went on to sell more than 40 million. That's crazy. Yeah, he had the techno one, though.
Yeah, that was, I felt like that, like, because that goes into all these interesting use cases for AI be cool, but I just feel like they always trying to push the boundaries with AI. And we don't even get to a baseline of just normal stuff you want to do with AI? Because I look into like getting one of them AI agents maybe to help with like email and stuff like that. Because there's people, I forget the email and everything. I got like 6 email addresses that I'm checking constantly throughout the day. So you could see how that could be, you know, draining.
Yeah.
Real quick, while we're at an intermission, are you caught up on the show?
No. Don't tell me.
I'm not.
Don't tell me. I've been seeing things here and there. How many episodes is out right now? 5?
7.
Ooh, I might be 2 behind.
Are you caught up on Meech and Terry?
I am. I did catch up on that, yesterday?
The new episode. So you saw the most recent episode?
Mm-hmm.
My dog Charles put them hands on him.
Man.
What he thought about messing with
what do you think
Charles like that? That man back at working at the factory and got drug dealers with sons. You don't think he was going to be able to fight?
What do you think of B. Mickey being brought back in? I missed his character.
I actually like him. I think he's going to prove himself. I think, and I also think they're going to have B. Mickey and them probably spy on Jay Pusher.
Where is they from?
Saint
What's the
Louis.
Accent? Stop it. Please. Turn it off. It is not believable whatsoever. I would have rather seen them have Nelly in the role.
Probably cost too much. Well, yeah. You know what, though? Jay Pusher always plays that type of role in every show. I thought he was in The Wire and he was in Saints and Sinners. He was literally the same type of person in both shows.
So he plays it well.
Yeah.
That's the accent is terrible.
Yeah. All the accents be terrible. I mean, hey, if you watch The Family Business New Orleans, they don't have no accent that they from New Orleans.
That's Carl Weber.
Mm-hmm. David Banner's a lead in that. What's it called? Speaking of that, his episode with Shannon Sharpe was pretty good. I haven't finished it, but I've seen clips. It was pretty good.
I've seen the clips as well.
And surprisingly, Wale's episode with Cam Newton is pretty good, too.
Wale, why was you mad at Kai Cenat? Tell me now.
I don't think he was mad. I think he was like, dang, I forgot all these cameras going to be on him. He was kind of just like going to the side. I was like, dang, you kind of got me looking kind of crazy out here. I don't think he really was mad because, you know, right after that, Kai was on his streams like, oh, I do know who this is. Like, because that happens to real people. Like, you'll see somebody like, you'll go home and like, oh, I do know who that is. Because so be a lot of times. I remember it's been some people I've talked to at Walmart for back in the day at home. And I've turned to somebody. It's like, man, hey, I couldn't tell you what their name is, but I know them. Like, you'd seen them at school. It's like, it's a guy I used to see at school all the time. We just got to talking. I just could not remember his name, but I knew him. But they would put a gun in my head. I would have died for that.
What you think of this, the streaming world?
I think the streaming university was pretty cool, and they had a streaming
prom. I liked it.
It's not for my demo. I think it's pretty cool. I actually wouldn't even mind if they did something like that for like older content creators. Like we went to a conference or something, and we all got the stream, and
that would be dope.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be dope.
That really don't sound like Number Afrotech. That's what it sounds like.
Blackest Tech.
I haven't filled out my stuff and I need to do it today. I'm doing it today and tomorrow for that for sure.
I'm on the fence.
For what?
On if I'm going or not.
I think I'm only probably going for what I have to go to do and then I'll probably be back the next day. Just cause
I'm looking forward to popping out at more cyber related events that aren't networking based.
Yeah, I get hit up all the time about like it'll be a CEO or founder of some type of product and they'll be like, yo, are you going to such and such event? And I'm like, I won't be there this time. Like, I had a guy, he reached out to me and I was like, yo, is your company looking to partner with like Security Podcast? And he said, I think the founders may be. So I've been always trying to finesse something anytime you reach out to me. I was like, look, let's be beneficial to both parties because we doing some good numbers on audio. Let's see. Did you want to transpire with... Oh, I guess you can get onto your... I guess you had a bullet point about this cybersecurity matter in countries that are not technology advanced.
Yes, it does matter. I feel like people are like, oh, I'm going to this third world country and I don't have to worry about my data or using the internet and things of that sort. And you should still be worried. You actually should be even more worried because where they may not have these technological means implemented that you're used to, that could also be an indicator that maybe they don't have the best privacy laws as well. Or just, yes, that's my take on it. You should definitely, cybersecurity should be top of mind, no matter if you're going to a country that's more advanced or a country that's less advanced. It's still something that should be on your radar. Just like I was sharing some tips when I was out of the country. And just talking about like just the use of VPNs to encrypt your data, or should you use an international plan or an eSIM, and just different components and things, pros and cons for using each of them. We know that it's going to be more expensive on that phone bill if you do enable or have a true international plan. And I don't mean just like a Mexico and Canada plan, but one where you can travel on the other side of the world and still be able to use your device. So yeah, just some things, food for thought.
If anything, I think it matters more when you leave because of the security controls that may not be in play. You know, they're telling so many people, hey, when we go to the airport, don't plug into this outlet and all this other stuff, because they've been doing all this other stuff to get information from your devices. So, you know, I agree. I think one day we're going to have like a really good talk about VPNs and are we actually secure, or are the VPN apps, the companies, are they being legit with our data, or are they doing something with it? So I think that could be like a darknet diary / deep dive one day that we could do some research on.
What do you think about the it just left me. Sorry.
What I was going to say, dude. Oh, side note, guys, we're going to bring back a live panel. I don't know when we're doing it, but specifically, everybody wants to talk about the Black woman manager thing. That's been, it's always a good topic. And I definitely like talking about it. Because it's like funny. That's like the one instance where I get pushback from Black women. But yeah, at the same time, I'm trying to be down for y'all and y'all pushing back on me and I actually get it. But I always tell them like, well, just realize with y'all the manager, somebody going to automatically think y'all trash because y'all say everybody trash. That's a Black woman manager. That's all I'll be trying to tell them. I don't think they can see that because they're focused on so much of what they've, you know, been through or experienced. It'll come back to you.
Oh, I was going to make a comment about card lockers, like the people who always got their cards locked, right? That ain't going to fly out the country, right? Especially if you ain't updated your phone or notified your carrier that you're traveling and now you can't use the phone and you need to hop on that Wi-Fi real quick to unlock that card, which means you're accessing your banking details to unlock the card on an insecure network. So just like those little things you have to keep in mind and be mindful of. If you don't have a VPN, eh.
Yeah. I think also you need to tell your company when you're traveling, only if like you can access your email or something, like if you're not going to have your work devices or whatever, you want to make sure to say, hey, I may log into something, I'm traveling so-and-so, just making sure it's not a country of interest when you're over there locking into something. So it don't flag and they may have to disable your access or something. Meanwhile, only you doing is just checking your email, making sure you know everything's everything. So that's just something they can also think about doing for that.
agreed with you.
I think the last one I want to talk to before we probably try to react to some TikToks is Ring cameras and doorbells now use AI to provide specific descriptions of motion activity. Now, if you do not have a Ring doorbell, a Google Nest, whatever you got that's recording people when they come to your door, whether you're in an apartment or a house, I really highly suggest you get one. Just because it can always keep people from doing the wrong thing and keep them accountable because they pick up very quick. So Amazon on Ring announced on Wednesday that it's introducing a new AI-powered feature to its doorbells and cameras, which offers users specific text descriptions of current motion activity. Now, when I get some of my Nest, I just kind of check the phone to see who it was, and that's about it. It's not nothing major. Now, when users receive real-time notifications about happenings at their property, the updates will be more descriptive. For instance, a person is walking up the steps with a black dog, or two individuals are looking into a white car parked in the driveway. I can see how this might, how we talking about Claudius, I can see how this could possibly be an issue if you don't actually check the footage versus just relying on the description. The feature aims to improve upon the vague notifications that were previously available. Users will be able to know exactly what is happening and can quickly decide whether it requires immediate attention. It should be noted that the AI only describes the first few seconds of the motion-activated video clip. The feature is being rolled out today as an English-only beta for Ring Home Premium subscribers in the U.S. and Canada. Users can choose to disable the feature by going to Settings in the Ring app. According to a blog post by Jamie Siminoff, Ring's founder and now Amazon's VP of Home Security, the company plans to introduce additional AI features. One of these combines several motion events into happenings in and around home into a single alert. Ring also intends to implement a custom anomaly alert that allows users to define what constitutes an anomaly for their property, enabling the camera to notify them when such an event occurs. Now, that would be cool. I could see if you was a man or a woman and you had a crazy ex that you didn't want to come by and said, hey, please alert me when this person comes by. I could see that use case. That's an anomaly. They shouldn't be there.
I think custom alerts are dope.
I know. You know, it'd be funny if you can customize your Ring doorbell to play certain songs people walk up. So like if somebody that's not supposed to be there, you could play that Deborah Cox, Nobody's Supposed to Be Here. I think that'd be pretty funny. Additionally, Siminoff mentioned that Ring will learn your routine so it can inform users when something is out of the ordinary. This may be unsettling for some users, especially considering Ring's past privacy concerns. We are just starting to scratch the surface of AI. I feel like we are back to the very early days of Ring again. I see unlimited potential for new experiences we can invent for our neighbors, Siminoff wrote. This announcement follows the recent launch of Ring's AI-powered search feature, which enables users to locate specific moments within video recordings. But yeah, I can see how learning your routine and maybe Ring get hacked and some stuff. And now you like, now people know your routine.
I was just about to say the same thing, literally. But also, what about, I know this is like comparing apples and oranges, but like, what is the company that monitors your house? The alarm?
ADT and
okay. Brinks. Yes, there we go. Them two. Do you think that they will start to incorporate the use of AI into some of their technologies?
Yeah, for sure. They're probably already doing it.
I have a cousin who he installs like the home security systems and stuff like that. And it's always just interesting hearing his perspective and just the different things that you are considering when it comes to actually trying to keep a property safe and not necessarily just like, not to just reduce Ring down to like the front door, but that's primarily what it is. And I just was also thinking like, so does Ring alert you if someone takes it? Cause you know, like everyone is not secured. Like I can physically walk up, take it off, and leave with it in my hand type of situation. I have seen some folks who have like some stuff you put on the door and it's kind of locked up in like a case or something. I've seen some of those, but would that be an anomaly that like someone stole your camera? You know what I mean?
I believe so. If it's, because it typically is connected to a certain like Wi-Fi network. So if it left around the network, it would say camera's offline. So you would know, okay, why is it offline? So then you start deducing what's happening. Oh, okay. This is the last person we saw, and we try to figure out who they is and get it like that. But I think I wanted to do one video because we gotta be like the Migos and Joe Budden and wrap it up.
Person that at the end of the interview process, people are still talking about when you leave because they've had such a good time. This is how you're going to maximize that part at the end of the interview where they ask you, do you have any questions for us? Because listen, there is a game and I'm going to teach you how to play it because you can't play the game if you don't know the rules. Hi, everyone.
And that's facts, because a lot of times a lot of people get to the end. Nope, I don't got no questions. Consider yourself not getting the offer.
My name is Beverly. I'm a chief operating officer. When they ask you, do you have any questions for us? You got to get these leaders to talk. A lot of times in the interview process, I will be asked, you know, what do you like about working there? What's your favorite part about your job? Or what's the culture like? Or can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, the salary range or whatever it is? And all of these questions at the surface level are great. But let me explain to you something. Leaders like talking about themselves, and they most certainly like talking about their organization. They like feeling like you care about what they're doing. I explained to you that this is your stage. I cannot express how many times somebody will have a really clunky interview. Maybe they're not feeling as confident. Maybe we can tell they're nervous, but they crush the question section. And because the questions that they ask are so informed and thought provoking, we let them go on to the next round because we know that there's something there. We see something there. Or the opposite, where somebody's doing pretty okay with the interview process, but then they have nothing prepared for the question section. Like, you are interviewing us just as much as we're interviewing you. Now, the first question that you're going to always ask is going to be about values. Say they have one of their values is teamwork and collaboration, and it's very high level. Why is that important to you, right? You're going to say, hey, so I noticed that one of your values is teamwork and collaboration. And I think that's really exciting because for me, especially, you know, it's really a passion of mine as I've, you know, chatted through this process with you guys. And I'd be really curious, does that value set resonate with you? And how do you see that showing up in your day-to-day work? Y'all, they're going to be talking. These are the kind of things that, again, they won't tell you, but it makes such a huge difference. So good luck.
I've always loved the interview gems, because it's an acquired skill set.
Yeah, and that's what we work on really. Like, I got a whole process where I show them how to look up what's going on with the company, the role, what type of questions you would ask based on who you're interviewing with, because you're going to ask different questions based on if you're talking to a manager or like a team lead or a director. So it's going to be different things you're going to ask to make it seem like you are definitely more interested and excited about working with the company, and just asking questions that set you apart from everybody else. And I normally have them write that down on a book so you came prepared as well too. So it always looks good.
Asking the right questions to the right folks. Definitely something that, especially if you interview last or first, like, you definitely want to make sure that you are the memorable person out of the bunch that they've spoken with today or over the past week or last few weeks.
I just want to add that if you are having those issues with all that stuff, please tap in. I'll probably be making a form pretty soon for people to get some interview questions to ask. So if you've been struggling with that, I got something that's helped me out of plenty of interviews, and I'll be giving you guys those questions for free. So make sure you're keeping a tab on whatever I post on YouTube or all my other social media sites as well. And do you got anything you want to leave them with today?
Take a break, unplug, step away, do something that's going to make you happy, but just take a breather. It's okay to take space and time and do nothing. It's okay to be still for a little bit. Don't be still for too long because it's crazy out here, but take some time away and focus on decompressing and just allowing yourself to breathe. It's needed. I'm coming back, returning back from my breather and my step away. And so just want to encourage somebody else to take that space that you need for your mental health.
I agree. And so, guys, also, YouTube, we have enabled the community function now, so you can post more on my actual channel, and then I can get back to you, and we start our own conversations around the YouTube channel, so please utilize that. Join the Discord, tap in with us on Instagram and LinkedIn, and also, in the description, we have a email to ask questions for us to answer on the podcast, so utilize that, and we'll get back with you. Leave a voicemail. Or as people say, like, do all those things and just rock out with us. But I appreciate everybody that's been tuning in and helping us out, whether it's been audio or video. We got some big things coming. But until next time, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.